one of the fundamental principles of the spiritual life is that God humbles the proud and lifts up the lowly. You see this again and again in the scriptures. Well, you see it again and again in life. It's one of the, it's not just a principle of the Christian life, it's a principle of life, human life. And it has lots of different, there are many different ways to describe it. In Anuwan, we typically speak about poverty of spirit, because the Lord loves the poor, He favors the poor. So if we're poor, then the Lord can fill us. If we're rich, then the Lord has to humble us. Or we might speak about the Paschal mystery, dying and rising. The dying part is the emptying, the humbling, and the rising part is the filling, the blessing. Now, that's just fundamental. That's every day, every moment of every day is true. But I think it gives us a principle on which we can base our reflections, because today's readings illustrate this principle very well. In the first reading, we see Solomon, who has become filled up, he has to be humbled. And in the gospel, we see this pagan woman who's so humble that she gets filled up, receives the blessing that she longs for. So, in fact, that's the whole that's the whole message. I don't even have to continue speaking, but let me just reflect a little bit further on these two cases. We'll start with Solomon. Solomon, remember, we've been following his journey for several days, or week, in fact, and we know that he started out lowly. Remember, when he was a young king, he wasn't lowly in the sense of being poor. He was born into privilege. He's son of David. David personally designated him to be his successor, so he's king of the whole country. So that's not lowly in that sense, but remember when the Lord asked him to ask him for something, and Solomon said, well, I don't know how to be a king. That was a lowly attitude. He humbled himself and said, look, I'm not worthy to have received these privileges and this authority, so give me a wise and understanding heart. So that lowliness of Solomon made it possible for him to become very wise. And he also became very rich, as we know. And yesterday, we got to what is probably the high point of that process of his becoming wise and rich. He encountered the Queen of Sheba, and she was just absolutely, her breath was taken away when she realized how wise and rich he was. You probably know some of the legends about Solomon and the queen, as if they became lovers and she bore his child and on. So, but the point of the scriptures is Solomon has reached a high point, not only in the sense of his openness to God, but he's become a big deal in the world. And this is where the danger comes in. And this is what we have in today's reading. This reading starts out when Solomon was old. His wives had turned his heart to strange gods, and his heart was not entirely with the Lord, his God. So he's rich now. I'd like to read the verses that come right before this. This is 1 Kings chapter 11. Our reading starts with verse 4. I'll read to you starting with verse 1, chapter 11, verse 1. King Solomon loved many foreign women besides the daughter of Pharaoh: Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites, from nations of which the Lord had said to the Israelites, you shall not join with them, and they shall not join with you, lest they turn your hearts to their gods. But Solomon held them close in love. He had as wives 700 princesses and 300 concubines, and they turned his heart. It's a little bit of a backstory. Our reading starts out when his wives turned his heart. Well, we're talking about 1,000 women here. So it gives you the idea that this man is not just weak like David was when he saw Bathsheba. He's got another problem. He's got a number of other problems. Now remember, the scriptures are not to be taken literally. It doesn't mean that someone sat down and counted out all his concubines and came up with the number 300. These are figurative numbers, meaning they represent a huge amount. In fact, 1,000 women means he's completely filled up with women. That's a perfect number, 1,000. Can't have any more. He's completely satiated himself with these princesses and concubines. Now you can see the problem. It's not just that he has a weakness, or you could say he has an addiction if you want, but no one, it doesn't matter how rich you are or how interested in women you are, 1,000 women, you can't even know them all. I mean, that's like a person who, well, anyway, you get the idea. There's Solomon. And it has this effect on his heart, turning his heart away from the Lord. Now, this is the problem. See, that's why the proud have to be humbled, because when they're proud, there's no room for God. And he is humbled here. He's told he's going to lose his kingdom, which of course means also losing his wives, because if you don't have a kingdom, you can't attract princesses anymore. You see, this isn't just a man of lust. This is a man whose hunger is for power, because to marry a princess is to extend your power. He might not even know these women. He might not know who they are, but he has this, what do they call it when kings marry for the sake of political, there's a word for that. Anyway, so, I mean, what he's doing is he's extending his reign over the Hittites and the Sidonians and all the names of the Ammonites and all these different people, which the Lord specifically told the Israelites not to do. So he's disobedient and he's power hungry. He's filled up. He might use the image that we got on Sunday. It was actually maybe even clearer on Sunday, this principle of being empty and being full. Simon Peter, the fisherman, he fished all night, he had nothing. He had an empty boat. And commentators say that experience of failure was a great preparation for welcoming the Lord. When Jesus wanted to get into his boat, there's plenty of room. There's no fish. So the empty boat spirituality, space for the Lord. Remember what happens when the Lord makes the sign of the miraculous catch of fish. They fill up both boats to the point that they're sinking, meaning there's no more room in the boats. Now you have to make a choice, Simon, Peter, either you, the boat or the Lord. And we know he chooses, even and leave not only the boat and leave all the fish and everything else and choose the Lord. So he still had that emptiness, and that emptiness was preserved by his letting go of the boat and the fish. So this is it, that Solomon, who as a young man was empty, as an old man was full, and that was the problem. Now, I hope you can see this applies to all of us. We're constantly filling ourselves, or tempted to fill ourselves, with something other than the Lord. Because we're not comfortable being empty. It's not a pleasant experience to be empty all the time. So our nature has this tendency to grab something to fill us. This is actually the principle that drives addictions. If you talk to an alcoholic, if you ask him, do you think that bottle is going to really help you? He knows it's not really going to help him. They're not stupid, these alcoholics. They know that drink is not really going to make a difference in all their problems, but they also know that at least they'll feel better for a little while, and that's what they choose. In fact, they're driven to it. After a while, that's the addictive process. The experience of being empty is so intolerable that they would rather fill themselves with drinks or any other addiction. I mean, that's the way it works. This It's hard to be poor. It's very unpleasant to be poor, unless we know how that emptiness can be filled by the Lord and by what's from the Lord. So here, I say this applies to all of us, not just, I mean, none of us has 1,000 spouses. I mean, we can say, well, we're not like Solomon. Well, yes, we are like Solomon. And we have in our nature an insatiable hunger. If we give into it, we will fill ourselves with everything and anything. So that's just human nature. Now, in very sharp contrast to Solomon, we have this woman in the gospel who turns out to be from the very tribes or peoples that are not supposed to be united with the Israelites. Here she's described as a Syrophoenician. Maybe we could have said she was a Sidonian or an Ammonite. She was from the Tyre was in the north of the Holy Land. And I don't know if it's in Lebanon or where it is, but anyway, it's north. It's pagan territory, Gentile territory, or if you want to use the language of the time, that's where the dogs live. That's the territory of the dogs. So here's this woman who you would think would have no space for the God of Israel, and especially for Jesus, who's a Jewish rabbi. He's an outsider to her. But this woman, however she got this, who knows? But this woman has such an emptiness, such an openness, such a poverty that nothing will stop her from getting the blessing. And that's why she's remarkable. Now, part of why she's so hungry is she loves her daughter so much. So she has an other-centered heart, which is essential. If you're going to be empty, you have to have a love for someone else. Love for ourselves is always self-satiating in a sense, or self-defeating in the long run. But I mean, if we don't have any concern for anybody else, we're in big trouble. So she has the advantage of having a daughter, I say advantage in the spiritual sense, of having a daughter who's troubled by an unclean spirit. And this moves the woman to humble herself more and more before Jesus. I know people are disturbed, and I think I find it disturbing too that Jesus calls her a dog, but that's apparently just a test. He's not putting her down in the essential sense. It's just a superficial test, which she passes so greatly. What strikes me about this woman is it's something like you see in the martyrs, when the martyrs are dragged before the king or the council or the executioner, and they're told, you know, give up your faith or we're going to slice you to pieces. And the martyrs say things like, do whatever you want. That's kind of their attitude. Hey, do whatever you want. I'm not going to change my absolute confidence in God, even if I die. To the last drop of my blood, or even if I had 1,000 lives. Or, you know, the martyrs have these lines that are so big. They don't care. Call me what you want, do to me whatever you want, I'm not going to give up in my trust in God. Now, that's the spirit of it. The only difference here is she's not facing an executioner. She's here in front of Jesus. She's not holding on to her faith against an opponent. Jesus herself seems to be the opponent. Jesus himself seems to be the opponent. But she has the same humble determination. Call me a dog if you want to. Tell me you're not going to help me if you want to. Tell me that other people get the privileges. I say whatever you want. I'm not going to believe that you're not on my side. And that's great faith. Very beautiful example. I won't let any evidence or any opposition change this confidence. That's poverty of spirit. That's radical emptiness. She's not clinging to anything else but God. God at work through Jesus. This is her greatness. So when she says, well, you know, even the dogs get scraps, she's saying, even a little bit of grace from you, Lord, is enough for me. Because I'm poor, so the beggars can't be choosers. I'm not going to be a chooser. I'm taking whatever you want to give, and I know that you're going to give me what's good. So that's a beautiful spirit, poverty of spirit, which makes it possible for her to receive the blessing for her daughter, which is also a blessing for her. That's how lovers are. When we love, we rejoice if people whom we love are blessed, as much as if we ourselves are blessed. And that's this woman. So we're being told, don't be like Solomon. Don't be full of yourself or full of your desires or try to satisfy all your nature's cravings, power, relationships, whatever, securities. Be like this woman. Be poor. And be persevering in that poverty of spirit.